This is ContactTalkRadio.com, consciousness in action, and you are taking action into your consciousness by tuning into Contact Talk Radio.
And on TuneIn.com, Hing.fm, and UpSnap Mobile.
Contact Talk Radio.
Welcome to Medicine and Health with Dr. Paul Anderson. This is a show about opening up the often mysterious world of how doctors think. The goal? To empower the listener to gain access to the best healthcare possible.
Good day and welcome to Medicine and Health with Dr. Paul Anderson. Our topic today has far-ranging effects on human health and the way that we feel every day. And the big topic is hormones and how they work and what they are and what they do. And specifically, we want to talk about the hormones that we often associate with female hormone activity. But what we're going to find out is that both genders really use all of these hormones. It's just how they use them. So, as we move forward today, our topics are going to use a lot of the same sort of terminology, so I thought we would get that out of the way in the beginning. The families of hormones that we're talking about are in the big group called steroid hormones. And steroid hormones are all sorts of different structures. They include anything that comes from cholesterol. So hence the sterol or steroid name comes from cholesterol because that's the parent. And so the parent being cholesterol, cholesterol is taken by different tissues in the body and turned into other hormones. And the hormones, if for instance you go to the adrenal glands, would be the stress hormones. If you go to one of the reproductive tissues, then it might turn into estrogen or testosterone or something of that nature. And then other places, such as the liver and the brain and everywhere else, really have very similar sorts of production material. So we're going to talk about all these things and why a hormone that's supposed to work in one place can make you feel differently, for instance, in the nervous system. So the steroid hormones, if we narrow them down, because in a one-hour show, we wouldn't want to talk about all of the steroid hormones. That'd be an awful lot to take care of. But if we narrow them down to the reproductive hormones that are mostly responsible for female reproductive activity, then what we see are the big categories being estrogen, which is actually a small family of hormones, and then progesterone, which is really just one hormone but can be used in different ways, and then actually testosterone. And so the first thing you need to think about with these hormones is that they're all from the same parent structure, which is cholesterol, which is a fat. And, you know, sometimes if you listen to, you know, TV or radio, or you read about cholesterol, you can think it's this really horrible thing. But cholesterol actually is a structure base fat that is used in the body. So without cholesterol, you don't have any hormones. You can't get any steroid hormones. So that's kind of an important thing. Obviously, we don't want the wrong kind, but that doesn't mean we don't want any. Otherwise, we'd have zero hormones. So these being the sterols or the steroid type hormones, we're going to focus on them from the point of view of female hormonal activity today. So in males, as I mentioned in the introduction, you have the ability to use estrogens and progesterone and testosterone, obviously. They're just used in different amounts and different sort of ratios in a male versus a female, but we use the same hormones between the two genders. So the big question of, you know, what is a hormone and what do they do? Hormone is a term that's, you know, it's pretty commonly used, and sometimes it's used, say, scientifically correctly to mean the structure that you're talking about. And then sometimes, you know, we might be talking to someone and they might say, well, you know, my hormones must be all messed up because I feel really, you know, sad, or I feel very angry, or I feel whatever. And so hormones get blamed for a lot of things, and sometimes they're to blame and sometimes not. So hormones sort of have this interesting use in our common terminology. So just to put a cap on what they do and what they are, we talked about they come from the steroid family, the cholesterol family. And then what happens is the reason that cholesterol turns into, for instance, estrogen versus cholesterol turning into cortisol or cortisone is simply what the tissue that's making it does with the cholesterol. So if cholesterol goes to your adrenal glands, for instance, and it goes to the this place called the zona fasciculata, the middle part of the adrenal cortex, the cholesterol by design is going to be produced over into cortisone-like hormone. So from the adrenals, we get the cortisone family. But that same cholesterol could go to the ovaries. And in the ovaries, it would go to these cells called the interstitial cells. And the cholesterol would then in the interstitial cell be turned not into cortisone, but into estrogen. So you see that you have the same parent. And so the body always has this way of using the same parent for multiple purposes. The way that it does it is each little tissue has different enzyme systems that can turn the parent into a different hormone. But really, if you've ever looked at these structurally, like a chemical structure, they're very, very similar. So then that leads to the next question of, well, what in the world makes, say, cortisone and estrogen different from, if they're so similar, you know, how do they work differently? And how does one area of the body know, oh, that's cortisone, we're going to do this with it, and that's estrogen, we're going to do something else with it? The way that the body knows is the, what we might call chemically the side or the bottom end of the molecule. So if you visualize this molecule that looks, you know, a little bit kind of like a couple of houses stuck together, really, in chemical terms, at least not in chemical terms, but in chemical structure writings. On one side or on the bottom, there would be a slight difference between, say, cortisone and estrogen. And on the bottom, where there is this difference, the structure would look different if we were drawing it out. So then to your body, there are receptors, and the receptors are going to be the mirror image of that side or that bottom shape. And that's what we call a receptor activating center. So if cortisone comes and it has one shape on the bottom or the side, and it gets to an estrogen receptor, it doesn't usually bind or stick there because it's different enough not to stick there. Then when estrogen comes along, estrogen can bump into that receptor and fit in, kind of like a key in a lock almost. And then the receptor turns the cell to do something. So the thing to remember is that they're receptor specific, and then the cell is told to do something because of the hormone. So one of the things people often talk about with respect to hormones is a hormone is a chemical messenger, and that's very true. So it's this chemical structure that goes and tells another cell to do something. So for instance, using our two examples, a cortisone-like molecule is often going to go and tell a cell to either respond to sugar in the blood a certain way or to respond to inflammation. That's why people are given cortisone for inflammation, for instance. Estrogen, on the other hand, estrogen is what we often term sort of a bottom of the food chain molecule. It has very, very specific things that it does. So we have this big concept of everything in the steroid family comes from cholesterol. And today we're just going to limit it to estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, the reproductive main hormones. So they go and based on the tissue type, the organ that they're in, they're turned into from cholesterol to those things. And then their function is to be a messenger. And they're a messenger at your other body tissues because of the way that they're shaped. So when we look at these and we think about what they're doing, sometimes you might think, or you may have experienced yourself or seen somebody else have this happen, for instance, where they were given a hormone treatment and seemingly it affected way more than their reproductive system. So, you know, we think classically estrogen, progesterone, and testosterone are working in the, you know, female reproductive system, and they're used for reproductive balance, the menstrual cycle, all of those sort of things. But then you think, well, you know, I know somebody who was put on, you know, hormone replacement therapy, and they were given estrogen, let's say, for instance, and all of a sudden they had these other symptoms that, you know, that some seem to be reproductive and some seem to be non-reproductive. How in the world does that happen? Well, inside the body, the more we learn about hormones, the more we learn that there are the primary reasons that they work for, say, reproduction and reproductive balance. But then there's lots of things that hormones do in non-reproductive areas. So one of the things, for instance, is they're very sensitive to balance. So in the case of estrogen, progesterone, and testosterone, after a woman goes through puberty and they're being produced in a cycling balance, and so there's the menstrual cycle and fertility and all that, there's a different level of hormones during those years than there is, say, after menopause when the hormone levels go down. But what's important is underneath all of that, almost regardless of the levels, the body is extremely sensitive to the balance of these guys together. And so a lot of the symptoms that people have are related to imbalance as much as they're related to excess and deficiency of a hormone. So for instance, we just talked about that idea of the shape of the hormone fitting into a receptor and all of that. Well, here's the problem with that. If the two hormones, and so I gave you kind of two different steroid hormones being cortisone and estrogen, but let's say there's two hormones that look almost identical. Would it be possible for one of them to bother the receptor site for the other one instead of working correctly? And the answer is yes, it's very possible. So the best example in this system is estrogen and testosterone are really so close in structure, because one is made from the other, that they hardly look different at all. And so what happens is, if you, for instance, take a female and they normally have a reasonable amount of estrogen and a low amount of testosterone, and you give them a high dose of testosterone, the testosterone will go and literally sit on all of the estrogen receptors and make them stop working. How can it do that? It's because the key in the lock is almost right. Have you ever taken your, you know, when people used car keys, for instance, now we hardly use car keys, but you know how a car key set had a trunk key and an ignition key, and they look almost the same and they feel the same and all that. But you can't start your car with the trunk key, and you can't open your trunk with the ignition key. It's kind of the same. If I have my trunk key, you know, stuck inside of my ignition, I can't turn the ignition on, but it's occupied by a key. Exact same thing happens if there's an imbalance in a female of estrogen and testosterone. And so what happens is, if the testosterone is too high, the estrogen receptors are all blocked. It's like putting the trunk key in the ignition, but they won't work. So I can't turn the ignition switch. So that's a big problem. Now, is there ever any time we use this therapeutically in medicine? Yeah, in hormone-sensitive cancers, often, for instance, an estrogen-sensitive cancer, a testosterone-like molecule might be given to block the estrogen receptors and slow the cancer down. So it's actually used therapeutically. But what if this is you and you don't need the extra testosterone, for instance, and your estrogen is low? What's it going to feel like? It's going to feel like suddenly you have no estrogen in your body at all. And to our patients, where, you know, they maybe had normal cycling levels of estrogen, And then for some reason, the estrogen drops down and the testosterone rises. They suddenly get symptoms that would say, gosh, I must have no estrogen at all left in my system. And that can be very unpleasant and disturbing. So the first thing when you're looking at, okay, I have symptoms that seem to be hormonal. What do I do about them? And what can cause them? The first thing to remember is it's not always that the levels are low or high. Sometimes it is. But it's also that there might be an imbalance between one and the other kind of hormone that work really, really similar. And that can be a big problem. So we want to talk in a little bit about how do we figure that out? You know, what do you do about that? The other thing is, what are the sort of normal, well publicized purposes, for these hormones? So here's the first thing. Estrogen is involved in the production of the ova, the egg. It's also involved in the maintenance of different tissues around the body that are important for reproductive purposes. So the lining of the endometrium is built by estrogen largely, for instance, and the ovary is stimulated to make egg based on the estrogen. There are certain types of cells in breast tissue that are estrogen sensitive. They're developed by estrogen. Progesterone is really quite a different part of the family. It's similar in that it comes from cholesterol, but its receptors are different. And when we think of progesterone, sometimes we think of balancing estrogen, and that's very true. And it does it through different types of receptors. So the estrogen ones may be stimulating one part of a tissue, and then the progesterone ones may complement or actually tell the estrogen receptors to calm down. So an example of this is during the normal menstrual cycle, estrogen is very high during the first 2 weeks when the endometrium is building up. And then in the second 2 weeks, progesterone is really high. And progesterone's job is to tell the estrogen to stop building up the lining and to keep the lining there in case there's a pregnancy. So progesterone has sort of a complementary role, but also it's telling estrogen it's time to stop doing what you're doing. Then there's testosterone, and you think, well, you know, women don't have very much testosterone. If you look at blood tests, there's not that much. But testosterone and estrogen, like I said, are so close that they're almost like a set of non-identical twins. That's how close the two hormones are. So in women, there's more estrogen, less testosterone. But the testosterone is there partly to modulate or balance out estrogen receptors, but also testosterone is there for various supportive purposes in a female. It's the same as estrogen is in men for supportive purposes to the testosterone function in many cases. So testosterone is very necessary in females, just not in a very big amount. So those are kind of the big, you know, purposes of these hormones. So what's a really common kind of presentation where we see, for instance, estrogen, progesterone not working and playing well together? A real common one would be either a woman who's having normal periods and cycles suddenly having no period. That can happen. Or a woman who is having, you know, normal periods and cycles suddenly going to having very excessive, unpleasant periods. And that can also happen because of an imbalance in these things. So you see, it's the same players in the game. The imbalance affects us differently and gives us different types of symptoms. So in a few minutes, we're going to go into a break, but right before the break, we'll just describe kind of the way that these things work. So the first thing that happens is if you have, remember from just a minute ago, estrogen kind of takes care of the first 2 weeks of the cycle before ovulation, builds up the endometrial lining. Progesterone takes care of the second 2 weeks and keeps the endometrial lining there just in case there's a pregnancy. At the end of the cycle, when there's no pregnancy, other chemicals go and say, okay, let's start over. And that's what we call the menstrual cycle. So all of the little blood vessels pinch themselves off, and the endometrial tissue leaves, and that's the menstrual cycle. So you could see that if there was bad crosstalk between the first 2 weeks of estrogen and the second 2 weeks of progesterone, you might have one of two things. Either not enough estrogen, and so you don't get any, you know, period, that's possible, or all estrogen and not enough progesterone, and then guess what's going to happen? You're going to have the signals for building up the lining, and it's building up and building up and building up, and it's way too much. And then either you have lots of bleeding all month long, or at the end of the cycle when it's time to get rid of all that, you have very, very, very long and excessive bleeding. The other thing that usually goes with that is a lot of extra pain, and that's because there's extra bleeding material that has to be sent out. So then there's lots of cramping and there's lots of other pain associated. So a simple imbalance between these two players of estrogen and progesterone doing what they're supposed to do, if they get imbalanced, these are really common symptoms that women will experience. So either, you know, no period at all, or way, way too much, or too much bleeding, or too much pain, that sort of thing. So when those things are going on, the first thing that we think about is, okay, well, maybe there's just a little imbalance here. And maybe it's not that your body is trying to make too much or too little of the hormones. It's just being triggered to do this for other reasons. So one of the things we'll talk about in the second half is what in the world could those reasons be, and what do we do about them? You know, because it's not always that there's that much wrong being it's all gone, or there's always too much. It's that they're just not talking to each other appropriately, and something has happened to get them thrown off. Okay, so that's an important thing to keep in mind. So we've got, in summary, we've got the female reproductive hormones, which are part of the family of the stress hormones, being the sterol hormones, which come from cholesterol, and they're related to cortisone, and they're related to other things. But we're mostly talking about estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, and the cholesterol is then produced out of body tissues and goes to different places. And in, for instance, in the ovaries, it's made into either progesterone or estrogen or testosterone. Same cholesterol in the adrenal glands is made into cortisone. So we have this multi-purpose thing that gets turned into specifics. And then once it's turned into specifics, it winds up doing very specific things inside of the system. So we've talked a little bit about what it does reproductive wise, meaning it's involved in the menstrual cycle, and the estrogen and progesterone balance each other out there. Also, estrogen and progesterone are involved in the development maintenance of the breast tissue, which is why sometimes when we get certain cancers in the breast, they can be sensitive to progesterones or estrogens or both. And then estrogen and progesterone work in this this concerted effort of the cycle, so that when there's ovulation and when there is the ability to potentially have a pregnancy, there's the possibility of the pregnancy staying and going all the way through. So that's another big reason estrogen, progesterone, testosterone exist. So we will go ahead and move into a break here in a moment. And then when we come back, we're going to talk about what happens not only to test and assess these types of hormonal imbalances and what can we do about them, but also why do these hormones also have effects beyond the world of reproductive system? How can we get muscle or joint effects from them? How can we get headaches from them? How can we get depression or anxiety or sleep problems or other things from these hormones? Because they obviously wind up affecting a lot of other things that go on along the way. And then when we wind up at the end, we're going to have a discussion basically about, okay, we know they can do all these things, and we know that the imbalances can be a problem. what can be done besides and including hormone replacement therapy, et cetera, as far as treatment for these types of problems. And another thing that, you know, comes up a lot is the only option that I have in the world of hormone imbalance, the replacement of the hormone. Do I have to have hormones as a treatment for a hormone problem? Is there anything else I could do that might be helpful along the way? So those will be all things that we'll wind up coming back to as well. Now, one particular topic that's important is how would a hormone, say these three big players that we've been talking about, estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, you know, what would they do? How would they involve themselves in other places in the body? So why would these hormones, which, you know, we think of should be kind of staying with the reproductive system and all of that, how in the world would they give a person a headache? Or how in the world would they maybe feed into making your muscles not work correctly? Or how in the world would they feed into, you know, things like even digestive complaints or other types of problems? And then the one that, you know, most people have some sense of is, if they shift, why do they beyond the reproductive system, why do they make the, you know, nervous system do something different? So beyond headaches, you know, why, when the hormones change, might one person feel anxious, or another person might feel depressed, or another person might feel agitated? And those are very, very important things to consider as well. So the first thing is, when we talked about this lock and key setup for hormones, and we think, okay, well, you know, they're supposed to go into a particular receptor. One of the things that the last 30 or 40 years in research around hormones has taught us is that estrogen, progesterone, testosterone work in other places. So there's receptors beyond the reproductive system. And that's really, really important to keep in mind. So when you think about it and you think, well, you know, how in the world could a hormone or a hormone shift or something like that make, you know, a headache or make pain or make some other problem? It's because those hormones have direct and indirect ways of affecting these other places in the body. So for one example, the lining of blood vessels have receptors in them that are very sensitive to estrogen and estrogen-like molecules. So sometimes if the lining in the blood vessels becomes changed, you can have things, classic things like, for instance, things like hot flashes, or even blood vessel shifts, such as, you know, headaches, etc., that would go on. And so when you think about it, the first thing that, you know, doctors have to think about and patients have to think about is, does this mean then that one place where the receptors have a problem is going to create another problem? So that example we gave of, you know, somebody having, you know, their period stopping because of this imbalance, then does that mean that they are going to necessarily have a headache? And is that why that would go with it? Okay, that's a fair question. Well, the more that we learn about all of these receptor types and where they work, the more that we're going to understand that a lot of times these things are connected, and maybe we've not been blaming the right thing for the problem. So, for instance, for a long time, people knew, just sort of by timing, that they would get maybe migraines at certain part of their cycle, or people would get migraines that were worse after menopause or better after menopause. So, obviously, there was some hormonal issue going on there. Well, then what they found out as they looked further into it is that there are these receptors in the blood vessels that affect the lining of the blood vessel. And sometimes if you get either an expansion or a spasming of a blood vessel, you get pain from it. If that happens to be in your brain, you can actually get migraine pain from it. So one of the things that will go on is a person will have a shift in their hormones, and the shift in the hormones will then go and aggravate something like a migraine. And it's not uncommon at all for people to say, oh yeah, you know, I have predictable migraines at the middle of my cycle every single month, or I have predictable migraines right before, right after my period starts every month. That's very, very common. And the reason for this is these same imbalances that might lead one person to having, say, no period, or another person, you know, to having too much period or something like that, or cramping, may in another person not do that at all, but might cause a trigger for a migraine, which, you know, can be obviously a real problem. So the first thing when we think about these other places is, if you're having cycles, does the symptom match up to the cycle somewhere? So remember the 20 minutes ago we were talking about the cycle, you've got the first 2 weeks are mostly estrogen being active, and the second 2 weeks mostly progesterone, and then the, you know, they take places and there's ovulation in the middle, and then we start the cycle over. So if someone comes and they say, I'm fine all month long, and then I start to have migraines the 2 days before my period starts. Well, then you think about what's different about that time. Well, 2 days before the period starts, that's where progesterone starts to go away so that the period can start. And so if that's the pattern, or if it's the day of or the day after the period starts where the migraine comes, then if that's the pattern, then we first are going to think about maybe progesterone dropping is part of the cause of this headache. If they say, no, I'm fine that period of time, but it's always right in the middle of my cycle. And you think, well, what's going on in the middle of the cycle? Well, in the middle of the cycle, you sort of have this changing of the guard, where the one part of the ovaries that makes estrogen is calming down and the estrogen levels are going down. And the other part that's supposed to make progesterone is getting more active, and the progesterone is going up. And so if that's the time where the headache comes, then there's a couple possibilities. One is the estrogen isn't going down like it's supposed to, and the other is maybe the progesterone's not going up like it's supposed to. So there's a lot of, you know, places and reasons for things that can go on. And the next question that then comes from that is, what are you going to do about this? Is it something you can test? Is it something that you can just try something for? Does it mean you have a big hormone problem, etc.? So that's what we'd like to spend the rest of the time with, would be how do we find out about these problems? And then what are we going to do about them? So those are some important things to consider, and I think that's what we'll be spending the rest of the time with. So the first thing is, well, what can you do about it? So one of the things is, if the symptoms are disturbing but not, say, life-threatening, or they're, you know, you're not having so much bleeding that there's, you know, going to be a problem that way or something, sometimes you can try things that are fairly straightforward and just look at balance and returning balance, and that's going to be all you ever need. And so some things that do that would be, just if you haven't, you know, seen your doctor and had things checked out, you want to check on the things that would also affect these hormones and their production. One thing that we've talked a lot about in prior shows is the thyroid hormone. So in the case of the thyroid hormone, if it is running slowly, then the ovaries are going to be running slowly, and they may have no problem making hormones at all. But when they don't run quickly and there's not enough stimulation from thyroid, the ovaries might act like they're having a big a deficiency. And so they wind up not making the right kind of hormones. This is very, very common in our practice. We see this in a couple of groups of people. One is a younger woman, for instance, you know, someone under 30 who's had fairly normal cycles, healthy otherwise, but now is just starting to either have no periods or intermittent periods or something. And so often in that case, the first thing that we'll wind up checking is going to be, are they anemic? Do they have a thyroid problem, et cetera? And the reason for that is anemia and thyroid troubles can both lead to low energy states for the cells. And so the whole problem is not really hormonal from the estrogen and progesterone point of view. It's there's not enough thyroid to run the ovaries. And so what you see is once the thyroid is balanced, the ovaries run totally normally. And so if you think about it, there'd be no purpose giving a reproductive hormone treatment if it's another hormone causing the trouble. And that's one of the most common troubles. The other is in people who either right before or right after say menopause start to have symptoms they've never really had before. So for instance, you know, they start getting a lot more cramping or they get more migraines or they get sleep or whatever, then you certainly also want to look at the thyroid and the adrenal glands because they're sort of there backing up the system. But let's say, for example, we have somebody and their thyroid's fine and the adrenals are fine. They're not anemic. They're otherwise healthy, but they're having these issues. Well, then the next thing that would be looked at would actually be to say, should we check the testosterone and estrogen and progesterone in this person and see how much is there, and if indeed there's a balance problem? So that leads us to the next idea of, okay, if it's not a simpler thing, like just an imbalance that could be helped with some nutrient support or adrenal support or maybe it's a little bit of thyroid or something, then what are we going to do about the hormonal side of the problem? Well, then you have testing. Now, up until fairly recently, the testing of hormones was largely avoided by doctors because some of the problems that go on in testing were hard to match up with the problems that went on in the symptoms. So a doctor would say, well, you know, this is a really common thing we'd hear. Well, my doctor told me my hormones change every day, so there's no point in checking them. Well, to one degree, that's true. Hormones do change every day. What their doctor's really saying in that instance is, your hormones change every day, so if I get the test, I don't really know what to do with the information. That's actually what they're saying. And so that's sort of a different answer than your hormones change every day, so there's no point in checking your hormones. So if it truly requires that the hormones be checked, the first thing you have to have is kind of a baseline, and that's different for every woman. So in some people, what we see is that they're having a cycle, so we can say, okay, we're going to check the hormones in the middle of one of these halves of the cycle, the first part where there's a lot of estrogen, second part where there's a lot of progesterone. And then we can see, based on what should be happening at that time of the cycle, are you in the ballpark of what should be happening or not? That's a big, important thing to consider. Now, if you are and you have a good balance of hormones going on, et cetera, for that type of time of the cycle, then the next thought is maybe what we're having instead of a hormone production problem is we're not using them appropriately. So if someone has the right amount of hormones but they're not using them appropriately, then we think of things that are less hormonal in nature. So is the liver just not getting rid of the hormones fast enough? Is the person extra sensitive to these hormones? Are there reasons that the hormones might be normal in amount, but not binding like they're supposed to. So those are all possibilities, and there's a lot of functional things that you can do about that. And by functional, we mean that doesn't necessarily need a medical treatment, but it needs some sort of physical assistance. You can assist the liver in getting rid of hormones. You can help in the production and management side of the hormones with natural means. The other problem will come, and a person will say, well, how are we going to know? Because I haven't had a period in 6 months. So, you know, I'm not having any cycling, or I don't feel like I am. Well, what we do in cases like that is just to test the hormones and see where they are, because we don't have a cycle to go on. And so the first thing we look for, maybe are they just all low? Is there just no hormone there to take care of anything? Well, in that particular case, then what we wind up having is a situation where the low hormones, we have to figure out the reason for it. Now, I told you earlier that low thyroid can cause low hormones, so we would check that. Menopause naturally causes low hormones. So if the person is actually in menopause, we would expect the hormones to be lower. But then sometimes there's different types of problems that go on between those two issues. There's a disorder called ovarian failure. It sounds very, you know, horrible. And sometimes it's an unknown reason for the failure, and it winds up being problematic. And sometimes the ovarian failure is due to other hormone problems that go on. So the testing issue is important, and it can be done. The tests are better than they used to be. But what you need to remember is you need to work with a doctor who's used to doing those tests and who is used to interpreting the tests based on the types of symptoms and the types of tests and matching them up. And the next thing that you need to do then is understand the test is limited, because the types of hormones in the body can shift every day. And so it's a piece of information we're getting. It's not all the information. So in the last bit here of the show, what we'd like to do would be to talk about what do we do about these problems when they come up. And so the way that we want to think about this is there's a spectrum of things you can do for hormonal balance problems that go all the way from very low intervention, and that would be things like eating differently, taking certain nutrients, doing other things that are just going to help the body work a little bit better. Then there's things that are not directly hormone related that may be helpful if you and your doctor decide this, such as I just need to be able to get rid of the hormones out of the body more easily. And those are things that are supportive to elimination. Support to elimination is going to wind up being things like supporting the liver and the digestive tract in processing and moving these hormones out. And in some cases, that's the biggest help that can be done. You have the right hormones being produced, but your body isn't getting rid of them fast enough, so you get symptoms from them. So it's not that the body's doing the wrong thing on the production end. It's just not moving the hormones out of the system the way it should on the removal end. So that's a very common sort of treatment approach also. And that may involve diet and exercise, but it might also involve specific nutrients or specific herbal interventions that will also feed into helping the body move things out. And the two big ways that the hormones are moved out is the liver-kidney process and then the digestive system process. And so doctors who treat these sorts of problems will often wind up working on both of those ends of the system. And then sort of the next level up is some other hormone is bothering your reproductive hormone. So we talked about that with the thyroid and adrenal hormones. So the thyroid is more, if the ovaries aren't getting the message from the thyroid, they're never going to make the right hormone. So we, if that's the problem, you fix that problem and the ovaries take care of themselves. The other is stress hormones in the adrenal hormone system. And so if we look and the reproductive hormones look pretty good, but you got all these symptoms and the thyroid is pretty good, but you still got all these symptoms and the elimination is looking good. So the liver and kidneys and the GI tract seem to be working well. The other area that you really need to have assessed in that instance is going to be the adrenal stress hormones. And there's a number of ways that are far beyond what we're doing today to go into. But because if you go back to the beginning of the show, the stress hormones and the reproductive hormones all come from cholesterol. They're all steroid hormones. It would be one thing to consider if you had extreme stress in your body. Your body is going to need to make more stress hormones, which is very true. It might be possible to imbalance the reproductive hormones, since they all come from the same parent, simply by having all of this extra stress in your body. So you see this in people, they get really stressed, you know, people who've been in war or famine or had big surgeries or whatever, they'll just stop having menstrual cycles, they'll become infertile. Well, that's because of this balance between the stress hormone family and the reproductive family. You can also, without something like famine or war or something, create a imbalance so that the stress hormone demand throws off the reproductive hormone. So you might not stop having periods, but you might start having painful periods, you might start having headaches, that sort of thing. So all of that to say, basically, that the stress hormone system, which comes from largely the adrenal glands and the cortisone-cortisol family, has to be assessed in these cases as well. Because if it's really messed up and over or underproducing, you're going to have reproductive hormone symptoms. And that's very, very, very common as well. All of these things we're talking about have either symptoms that can be looked at or tests that can be done through standard labs. So you can check your, you know, cortisol output. You can check your thyroid, like we talked about in other shows. You know, you can check on lots and lots of these things. So we have this sort of spectrum from maybe just dietary and lifestyle interventions, exercise, et cetera, good sleep habits. Then we have maybe some nutrient additions to support getting rid of the hormones when they're done. Then we have the other hormones. It's a little bit more intense there, but you maybe thyroid assessment and treatment, adrenal stress hormone assessment and treatment, which could be all kinds of things. And then we get up to the end of maybe it is the estrogen, progesterone, and testosterone that are at fault and they're the problem. So, you know, digestion and manipulation of the hormones is fine. Adrenal and thyroid are taken care of. Stress is being managed better, all that. But I still have hormone issues. And you look and indeed, you've got high estrogen or you've got low progesterone or you have high or low testosterone or maybe they're just not talking to each other very well. Well, then what do you do about that? Well, what you need to do first is decide whether hormones are important or not. And if hormones are going to be important, then you need to monitor how the hormone is affecting the body. So in some cases, women will say, I really don't want to take extra hormones, but I know I have this problem. My progesterone's low. What can I do? Well, one thing that can be done is the progesterone being low or estrogen being high can be helped often by certain herbal types of interventions. It's not as fast as a hormone treatment, but it works quite well and there's no hormone involved. So in many cases, people will go to physicians who are trained in herbal medicine, that sort of thing, and that will be very helpful. And then sometimes for a short time, the symptoms are just so bad, maybe heavy bleeding or migraine or whatever, that you may want to use a hormone. So that's sort of at the top end of the scale. Well, then you need to think about, you want a physician who's well-trained in the broad spectrum of hormones, and you want to use the least synthetic form of the hormone possible. So you hear about natural hormones or bioidentical hormones or that sort of thing. You want to make sure that you're seeing a doctor who knows how to use those. So the best example on each end of the spectrum is the birth control pill hormones are completely synthetic, and they might bind to the hormone receptors, but they're not really having natural effect in the body. They're just making the receptor work. You can get a normal natural progesterone in a pill form or cream form, get a normal natural estrogen in a pill or a cream form or something, and it actually is exactly like the hormone in your body. Those are more well received usually by the body and theoretically have less negative side effects because they're a chemical your body sees all of the time anyway. So as we've been talking through, we've looked at how these hormones, the steroid hormones, are all from the same family. They come from the cholesterol family, and how the stress hormones and the reproductive hormones, because they're from the same family, are not only related but can affect each other. We've also seen how estrogen, progesterone, testosterone will create symptoms from imbalance just as much as from being present or absent. So it's not always that you just don't have the hormone or you have too much. It's that the two aren't balanced together very well. And so what that leads us to is the assessment of female hormone balance problems is very important. It's very important to incorporate the use of a physician who's used to looking at these symptoms and trying to assess balance. And then we looked at the fact that once we decide there's trouble, there's a whole spectrum of not only to test or not to test, but what kind of treatment are we going to be using as well. And the important part about all this is it can sound very complicated from the outside. It can be very complicated when you're trying to work with a patient on all of these factors. But really the most important thing is that you have a physician who is trained to consider all of this and not just give you the same prescription for every hormone problem. So in looking for a physician to help you out with that, the things that you want to consider are if you're in a state or province in North America where you have licensed naturopathic doctors, they're very well trained to look at these things. We have naturopathically trained physicians on staff at our clinic, Anderson Medical Specialty Associates in Seattle, and this is a big area of expertise and specialty with those doctors. If you're not in an area where there's naturopathically trained physicians, then the thing that you want to look for would be a functional medicine trained, a functional or integrative medicine physician. They would be very well trained to help you with that as well. So in summary today, we've talked about hormones and specifically the female reproductive hormones. We talked about the large amount of reasons why they can give you the same types of symptoms and the importance of assessing and then appropriately treating those imbalances that go along. I'm Dr. Paul Anderson from Anderson Medical Specialty Associates in Seattle, Washington. This is Medicine and Health with Dr. Paul Anderson. It's been my pleasure discussing this with you today. And I hope you all have a very good day, and we'll see you on the radio in 1 week. Thank you.
Anderson Medical Specialty Associates is the clinic that Dr. Anderson founded to provide high-quality, integrative medical care to those with cancer and chronic illnesses. In over 20 years of work with this patient population and research into the best practices for treatment, this clinic provides the highest level of care. Their focuses include all types of cancer, autoimmune diseases such as multiple sclerosis and lupus, as well as chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia, and chronic infections such as Lyme and Lyme-like illness. Their only goal is to help each person find the best path to health for their individual needs. Located in Seattle, Washington, visit the clinic website www.amsa1.com or call the clinic at 206-629-2186. You've been listening to Medicine and Health with your host, Dr. Paul Anderson. Visit the clinic website at www.amsa1.com or call the clinic at 206-629-2186.